What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. Larry Rifkin and John Krofcik at your service. And we are talking about some serious stuff today. I know we say that a lot, John, and we try to leaven the whole thing and lighten it up with our banter back and forth. But I don't know that I'm in that mood, given what I've just seen in terms of the pictures that I'm seeing from Puerto Rico, from the U.S. Virgin Islands, and I have recently been to both, and it really is devastating.
Oh, my goodness, yes. They're in bad shape there.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, the people on those islands are so remarkable, and I've never quite understood whether, in fact, the relationship with the mainland has been beneficial to the people on these islands. Not certain exactly at times what our role is in the Virgin Islands. And, of course, Puerto Rico is kind of in political limbo, and I sensed that when I was there. But more importantly, I guess you and I have had the fortune of meeting a man by the name of Nelson Dennis. And he's someone who has written perhaps the most controversial book about the relationship between the mainland and Puerto Rico itself.
Yeah, I just can't believe what he told us when he was on the air. I mean, that the stuff we've done to Puerto Rico, we should be helping. I so many times, you know, some common sense things we could be doing, and it's just it makes my head spin.
Well, just the Jones Act alone, where a lot of commerce has to go through the United States and really steals, I think, the opportunity for the people of Puerto Rico to benefit from something that seems so naturally theirs. And he also tells us about the fact that we've tried to take away their First Amendment rights at times. And I've got to tell you, there are probably two times that I have been in this radio universe where I have felt very, very badly about America. I love America. I think you and I both love the fact that we're not perfect and we're always trying to create a more perfect union. So we look at a lot of the abuses and the real injustices over the years and we try to address those. But when I see some of the things that we continue to do, and I think you and I, when we had The Color of Law on with Richard Rothstein, and that hasn't really actually been posted yet when you'll be listening to this, I would think, but wait till you hear about housing policy in the United States over the years. It's really going to make you very upset that our country did not right a particular wrong as it relates to segregation.
Oh, that shocked me. That shocked me. And this about Puerto Rico shocks me. I mean, how can it go on, too? I mean, how come we're not addressing this? And I guess it's all about money, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Who controls the purse? Who controls Congress? I mean, these are things that really do need to get into our consciousness because it's real and affects real lives. But I'll go back to Richard Rothstein, The Color of Law, and you're going to be hearing that podcast shortly here on America Trends.
Right.
I'll go back to John Perkins, the economic hitman. And I had him on the program a number of times, and that got my blood boiling. Some of the things that we as a nation have done to be the tip of the spear for business interests around the world and what we have done to really not look after the best interests of people in Central America and South America and working with the most detestable human beings to try to keep these people down just to feather the bed of those who are already wealthy enough for themselves.
Yeah, that's another incredibly stupid, I mean, in our name, we're going around and we're, we're literally destroying countries so we can have what we want. I mean, it's awful.
Absolutely. That one. And then, of course, what Nelson Dennis has told us about their relationship with Puerto Rico. Now, he wrote this book called The War Against All Puerto Ricans. I guess he really wanted to get people's attention.
Yeah, he wanted to fire them up. Wow. And they should be.
And he did. And that book became a bestseller on the island. And yet, I think it's a little-known history that we're going to be sharing with you today, because we're taking one of our vintage interviews with Nelson Dennis.
Right.
And we had the privilege, I think, John, of working with him three times.
Yep. Three times we did.
Yes. And he's such a brilliant guy. So you're going to be hearing that as part of a constellation of things you're going to be hearing, because we're adding Nelson Dennis and his great work to another friend of ours.
Yeah.
And here we can smile
Jennifer
a little bit.
Jennifer Briney. Yeah,
yeah, Jen Briney.
But she visited Puerto Rico, and having her insights, and you visited Puerto Rico, and having both your insights on it is very interesting.
Well, she went there clearly on a historical mission. She went there to look for some of the telltale signs and images that Nelson Dennis portrays about the injustices. I didn't really go there for that purpose. I'm going to indicate that my wife and I went there to get away. But I did come away with certain impressions. And one of the impressions was that as much as we have done to really disturb the economic sanctity of that island, in fact, nobody holds it against us. The Puerto Rican folks that I met, they love America. They really do.
They want to be real. They want to be a state. Really.
Yeah. Well, they are Americans.
Right.
But they don't have full faith and confidence of the government. They don't have representation. And we'll define a lot of that with Jen Briney in just a moment. But let's back up.
Sure.
And talk about Jen. I mean, she got interested in Puerto Rico, but she's got a bigger portfolio.
She's got an incredible task because she reads the bills and she knows what's going on with these bills, and she reports it, which is something I don't think anybody's ever done.
Well,
or can ever understand.
Well, she's got this incredible podcast called congressionaldish.com, and you've got to go up on it and check it out because, as John said, she is not one who takes handouts and takes summaries and press releases. She's got to go in and read the bill, read about the debate, make certain that she understands it, and then explain it in lay terms as to what it was that this bill means. Because many times when you read the name of a bill, it's the exact opposite, you know, the security of our homeland bill or whatever. And that's meant to take away our rights and not the rights of the terrorists. So whatever it is, Jen Briney gets beneath the surface and digs it out. She's remarkable.
Plus, it's fun to listen to. She's really, the way she presents it is very interesting, and it keeps you on the seat, on your edge of your seat. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Well, no, she really does. And she really has a wonderful energy about her. I love her passion. And she is somebody that we have consulted with, John and I, about our own podcast, because we're new in this arena and Jen's been in it for a long time. We would have her on the radio program simply because she was a great guest, and she added a lot of content, and expect her back here on America Trends. But we're focusing our energy during this interview on Puerto Rico and a little bit about some congressional issues and how Congress works. But she's got a lot more in store for you. So you're going to hear her time and again. But go to her website, too, and go to Congressional Dish.
Congressionaldish.com.
Absolutely. Well, let's get on. We've got two incredible guests, a really important topic, and we can only wish the people of Puerto Rico a speedy recovery from Irma. What a tragic event.
That whole, the Caribbean just got ripped up. I mean, awful, awful.
And I was following it throughout because I'm also a big fan of the Conch Republic. And as somebody who has gone to Key West on a number of occasions, and I was watching and I kept seeing where Key West was about 10 minutes away or 10 hours away, and I kept watching to see what kind of devastation. And to some extent, I think Key West, because of its positioning, did better than a lot of the other keys.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just seen a lot of the pictures coming out of there. It's going to be a long time before things get back to normal. whatever normal is.
I know. Well, we're going to be dealing with that, how cities and states and others recover from disasters, because I think perhaps we're in for a lot more of this. But let us focus our attention now on Puerto Rico with Jen Briney and Nelson Dennis. A lot of content for you. And if you have to divide it up, come back, listen to what you can now, and then come back, because really, it's all great material here on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. Thanks for coming by.
With us on the line for AmericaTrendsPodcast.com is an old friend of ours who's really an old and skilled hand at these podcasts, and that's Jen Briney from congressionaldish.com. And tell us a little bit about how you got into the podcasting world.
Well, as always, thanks for having me. It's always great to talk to you. And I got into podcasting because I had things to say. I was finding things happening in Congress that no one was talking about. And so I got into podcasting because it was an open door. It was something that I could technologically do with my MacBook Pro, and it was something that had no barriers to entry. There were no bosses I'd have to impress, and there were no, you know, storylines that I would have to cover in order to work my way up the ladder. It was like, no, I could have a show right now, and I control all the content. And so that's how I got started, and I stuck with it because all of those assumptions turned out to be true. And now I'm able to talk about things that the corporate media just doesn't for one reason or another. But it's and it's an enormous amount of freedom. That's why I chose podcasting, and that's why I stayed with it.
Congressional Dish, I mean, you're following stories that a lot of us miss. You're reading the bills. You're analyzing who got their hands into the recipe. I mean, you're doing some things that you don't hear very often on the regular commercial media.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's my favorite part about it. Like, one of my favorite episodes lately was on FirstNet, which is a wireless communications network that the government is supposed to set up for our emergency first responders, which I think is quite relevant to the fact that we keep having hurricane after hurricane. And so they were supposed to, years ago, have this set up, and instead of setting it up, they're basically giving money to AT&T, and our emergency network is going to be AT&T's network. And I feel like this is something that we should be having a national conversation about, and no one even knows that it's happening. So it's just, I'm finding these stories that I feel like should be national news and should be discussed, but they're not. And so I'm just hoping to kind of put it out there, and then hopefully it'll get picked up by some people with larger microphones than my own.
And how often does that happen, where something that you find, a little nugget, an acorn, and then somebody popularizes it by picking it up?
It's happened a couple times. I'm going to say that the most direct thing that I was able to track is there was something that was slipped into a bill years and years and years ago that protected basically companies like Monsanto. So it was like they could put food into the food supply without it being officially tested. And this stayed law for 6 months. But there were so many people, myself included, like at the time I was pretty heavy on Reddit. And so when people on Reddit picked up that that got slipped into the bill, a lot of people started talking about it, and it got nicknamed the Monsanto Protection Act. That was kind of fun. And 6 months later, it got taken out of, this is actually when the government shut down. In the law that reopened the government, they repealed that provision that it got some fire on the internet. And so I don't know if I was directly responsible for that. I mean, I know a lot of people were involved, and, you know, you can put something out there and someone picks it up and then someone bigger picks it up. And then there was that chain reaction that happened. I'm not sure that I was the start of it, but I do know that I was a part of it. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that by putting it out there, things like that are going to happen and I'm not even aware of it. And I think in some way this has had an effect already. It's just really hard to measure.
Well, of all the things that you've got posted now, we want to go back and talk, of course, about Puerto Rico, because you took a visit there, and there's a lot about what Congress is going to do or not do for Puerto Rico that affects their future. But you've got FirstNet empowers AT&T. You've got other health care bills. You've got Save the Post Office saying that that's in jeopardy. And you've got air traffic control privatization. I mean, of all those issues, which is the one that stirs you the most emotionally, that you're so concerned about that you don't see anybody else focusing on?
Well, the one that concerns me the most is what they're doing with health care. But that is something that I think everyone is focused on. So that is nice that I'm paying attention to something, and so is everyone else. out of those right now, I'm definitely deeply concerned about Puerto Rico, especially that I'm watching the live feed from San Juan right now, and it's being sideswept by this hurricane, but it's definitely causing some damage. And Puerto Rico is broke as it is, so I'm concerned for them because right now we have this oversight board that Congress created to control Puerto Rico last summer, mm-hmm. and now it's actually controlling the territory. It will control the territory for at least 2 more years. And so even if we do give money to Puerto Rico, since it is U.S., you know, it is the United States, so if the federal government gives the territory money, it's not the Puerto Ricans that are going to decide what's done with that money. It's going to be this weird financial control board that has people that were selected. I mean, basically, it's stuffed with bankers, and it's people that were selected by the U.S. Congress, not the people that live on the island. And so when I'm looking at the immediate, you know, what am I concerned about with the off-the-radar things I've talked about? I'm really concerned about Puerto Rico right now. It really is one of the top things on my list.
Well, help us to understand, because we are going to couple this interview with Nelson Dennis, the War Against All Puerto Ricans. We've interviewed him a number of times, and we want to make certain to get a lot of that history in. And the history is pretty awful, isn't it, to start with?
Yeah, and actually a lot of the details of that history was taught to me by Nelson Dennis, so he might be the person you want to get those details from. But, I mean, basically what I know is that this island, when we took it over, we made the people of Puerto Rico citizens, essentially so that we could draft them into our wars. But they've never been able to vote. So they do have a representative in Congress, but their congressperson is only allowed to vote on committees. And if that is the deciding vote on the committee, then the committee has to vote again. So it's like they kind of have a person in Congress running around that can say things, but there's no real power there for Puerto Rico. They have no votes whatsoever for the presidential race, so they didn't get to choose Trump, even though Trump has the power to choose who's on the financial control board. And so, you know, it's really unfair that Puerto Rico has to follow the rules of the United States federal government that doesn't have any say in who represents them there. Not really.
Is it a lot like the District of Columbia in terms of representation?
Yeah, that's actually a really good comparison, except the idea behind not allowing the people in D.C. to vote is it was supposed to be much more limited. It was supposed to be the people that are crafting the rules shouldn't really get to participate in the process. And I don't really agree with that. I think D.C. should be able to vote. But it was completely different reasons. I mean, that was because D.C. was the capital and they wanted to kind of to separate the powers. This is a totally different thing. This is an island that we wanted to control because it was basically a giant sugar plantation. And we used the people of Puerto Rico to serve that sugar industry, to serve the private industry. And we used the people of Puerto Rico to serve in our wars. And so we're using people there. This has nothing to do about separating powers. This is all about taking advantage of the people that live on the island from the very beginning. And so here we are 100 years later, and they're still getting kind of screwed by the United States federal government. I mean, it's being used, and this was Puerto Rico's fault, but it is being used by very, very rich people, John Paulson, Peter Schiff. It's being used by them as a tax haven because basically investment incomes are not, you don't have to pay federal taxes on it. So the rich, it's turning into their playground. While right down the street from these rich people who are living in gated communities, there's people that are living outside, going to work every day in structures that are, you know, barely more than a couple of wood planks with cloth over them. There's poverty all over the island. The healthcare system is a mess, but so many of these privatized enclaves exist there now that it's a really interesting example of the difference between rich and poor. And yeah, it's just one of these situations where I see unfairness in our own country.
And when I go back and I look at the history, and of course, Nelson Dennis does a great job of outlining some of the corporate tax exemptions, and he looks at the shipping laws that are really odd in terms of taking away some of the maritime benefits to the islanders. But the one thing that struck me was the fact that we also gave a manufacturing exemption at a period of time when we were trying to make Puerto Rico a bulwark against communist Cuba. And when we saw that Cuba wasn't really moving along, we said, well, we don't need to show how well capitalism works, and we'll pull those benefits back too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when they did that, I mean, it happened in 1996, I believe. It was during the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. That's when the decision was made, and then it was fully done in 2006. So all of these tax credits that were given to these manufacturing industry, I mean, like the pharmaceutical industry in particular, was and remains huge on Puerto Rico.
Mm.
Yeah. And so those tax breaks went away. But then another thing happened, too. It wasn't just the tax breaks, but it was also the fact that the same thing that's happening to all industries in the United States is also happening to the pharmaceutical industry and every industry here, which is that labor is cheaper elsewhere. So in the same way that we've seen, you know, auto manufacturing jobs and manufacturing for textiles and all kinds of stuff go overseas, go to China and go to Indonesia and all these cheaper countries, the same thing is happening in Puerto Rico. They have a minimum wage. It's less than ours, but it's there. So, yeah, there's this race to the bottom that we're experiencing globally. It hit Puerto Rico at the same time. So manufacturers, they did leave because those tax credits went away. Then you had this globalization that had that giant sucking sound of jobs leaving the island, and the island ended up going broke. And there were some very unwise short-term decisions made by people that were really trying to protect their own jobs that were like, okay, then we're going to go and get loans in order to keep the lights on this island. And the terms were so loan sharky that they were almost impossible to pay back. In fact, they are impossible to pay back. And that's what led to their financial crisis, and Congress's solution was not to tell the loan sharks, okay, you made bad debts, you're going to have to live with that. Instead, it was to create this financial control board that's going to cut a bunch of services and privatize things on Puerto Rico so that the banks can get every dime that they feel that they're owed.
Now, before into how this group was assembled, I mean, there are people when they hear that there's $70 billion in the hole and they say, well, they're profligate. The people don't know how to manage their money. They're spending too much on social service programs. I mean, it feels as if we've got the story all wrong here on the mainland.
I mean, that's how I feel about it. After visiting there, you know, there were bad decisions made on the part of Puerto Rico, but their hands are tied. You know, you kind of alluded to it earlier. There's something called the Jones Act, which makes everything in Puerto Rico more expensive for rich and poor alike, which is that if you're going, like, let's say you have a ship coming from, I don't know, Europe, and it has a bunch of stuff on it. Instead of stopping to drop off the Puerto Rico cargo on the way to Florida, it has to go all the way to the United States. Everything that's going to Puerto Rico has to be loaded then onto a United States flagged ship that has a United States staffed crew and then be brought to Puerto Rico. And that's an enormous waste of time and resources, all to have it on a U.S. ship. This is a favorite of the U.S. maritime industry, and it costs so much more. So the products that end up in Puerto Rico, you have to pay more for them because the transportation costs were so much more. And so we have these laws like the Jones Act, which Congress could address, but because it's a favor to the shipping industry, they're not addressing it. Instead, they create this board. I mean, there are solutions that could be had. But Puerto Rico, again, doesn't have a say in the U.S. Congress. There's no vote there for them. So what they have to do is they have to appeal to other states. They have to appeal to, you know, Florida, New Jersey, New York, these places where Puerto Ricans are going to, because they are U.S. citizens. They can migrate with no problem. They're not immigrants. They are us. And so they're coming to the states, and it's like, all right, if you don't want to deal with the problems on Puerto Rico, then you're going to deal with them in Florida, New York, or Jersey. So someone has to stand up for us in Congress. But that's the inherent unfairness of all of this.
Well, you've gotten two steps ahead of me. I do want to get back, though. No, great. But I do want to go over why it is that President Obama, back in 2016, decided to turn the island over to a lot of these Wall Street financiers. Why was it that he went along with this? I know he calls it, or they call it, a fiscal control board, and the people in Puerto Rico call it a la junta because they are basically a dictatorship of unelected technocrats. How did he go along with this?
Well, you have to remember that last year, the Congress, both in the House and the Senate, was controlled by the Republican Party. So they had to come up with something that would work for both of them. And so the Republicans, they created the bill that made that financial control board. What Obama's role was to sign it. And it was kind of like you do this or do nothing. And also in the bill, which is what, you know, people that care about Puerto Rico are going for, it created a way through the financial control board. But the banks, like I said, these loan shark terrible deals that Puerto Rico took, it created a process in which those banks might have to take a cut. There would be a renegotiation in this process that created a financial control board the Financial Control Board has the ability, not necessarily the mandate, but the ability to negotiate with these banks to make the loans better if they choose to do so. What I've witnessed is they seem to be choosing to privatize the commons and, you know, cut services and things that were promised like pensions to the people of Puerto Rico. Austerity seems to be their choice, but they do have the power to renegotiate the loans. And so I think that is the part of the people that were trying to solve a problem here. That was the part where it's like, okay, well, this has hope of helping Puerto Rico, and I believe that's probably why it was signed. But, yeah, you can't pin all of this on Obama based on the fact that he wasn't the one that had the ability to write it, that had to come from Congress.
Now, we talked about the states, and you talked about a number of states that have a lot of skin in the game because there are many people who have come from the island to those individual states. What about the fact that because all of the loans or debt that you could buy from Puerto Rico is exempt from federal, state, and local taxes, that many other states look at this and say, well, I've got a lot of people here in Connecticut or Pennsylvania who have purchased this, and I don't want them on the hook at the end of the day if they have to default. So other states, there's a lot of skin in the game, is there not?
There is, and, you know, more people own Puerto Rican bonds than seem to realize it. John Oliver did an excellent piece on this on his show, HBO show last week tonight. But it basically, the issue is that Puerto Rican bonds were mixed up in other, you know, financial packages, and they weren't named Puerto Rico.
Right. They were in these tranches, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of like with the subprime mortgage crisis, yes. You just saw things being chopped up and mixed up together. Just a
right.
Recipe of horrible. And it's like the same thing happened with the Puerto Rican bonds. But as someone who sits outside of this and looks at it, even if I'm someone that owns the bonds, I feel like that's what you get for gambling. Like, you gambled and you bought bonds that were being issued by a country that was being, you know, loan sharked and was deeply in debt. And it's like some, you win some, you lose some. And I look at it and think, sometimes you lose them. And that's just, I don't know, maybe I'm kind of callous to that.
No. No, you're certainly not callous. But you've got this buildup of $70 billion in debt. You've got this economic crisis that they're facing. And at the same time, because of a lot of these factors, some of the best and brightest of the Puerto Rican people are moving to Florida. The Orlando area is getting quite
Absolutely.
An influx. And so you say to yourself, I mean, is this a self-fulfilling prophecy that now some folks are leaving the island and they may be among the most productive?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, it's unfortunate. What you're seeing right now is I think there's a weird migration going on, and this hurricane has the ability to possibly make this even, like, accelerate this even more. It's the disaster capitalism type of thing where it's like you have all these rich people moving in. Peter Schiff, he talked to Joe Rogan maybe like a week or two ago, and he's super rich, made a bunch of money in fracking and gold and all kinds of stuff. He's a billionaire. And he lives on a property that's owned by Ritz-Carlton, and they have golf courses, and they have their own hospitals and their own schools, and, like, it's their own community on this island. And I think that's what you're going to find in Puerto Rico more and more, where it's, like, people like that live in these communities that have their own hospital. Like, you don't need the public stuff, and so they don't have the incentive to care. What they do care about is that the roads are falling apart because that affects them, so now they're trying to privatize the roads, too. So you're going to have this situation, which is already – it's already evident on the island when you go, where it's like some people live in these private enclaves.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everyone else is left to fend for themselves.
Well, I'll tell you.
The island doesn't pay federal taxes. There is this argument like, well, you're not paying federal taxes. Why should you get the same benefits we get here in the States? And that's where it all just kind of falls apart. Either Puerto Rico is the United States or it isn't. And we have to make that decision at some point, at least in my opinion.
Well, absolutely. And we'll talk about that, the politics of it all. But when I met someone on the island who told me that teachers there, I think as a maximum, are making about $35,000 a year, and yet they have to be able to speak fluently English and Spanish. I mean, the rigorous accreditation process, it is pretty remarkable that they're able to populate their schools with enough teachers. And the other thing that I found amazing, and I don't know about you, Jen, when you were there, but as much as I would start talking about some of these issues and some of the terrible things historically that the mainland has done to the island, they don't feel unkindly toward the rest of America. They're very, they're wonderfully warm people, and they don't really, you know, kind of incorporate a lot of this history into their thinking.
They don't. And I found the same thing. I asked bartenders and Uber drivers and waitresses and anyone that I could. I asked, how do you feel about the United States? And they said, we want to be a state. So they're, most of the people that I talked to, they were not looking to separate from the situation. They were looking to have equal rights to the rest of the American citizens. None of them wanted to lose their citizenship. But I do think that a part of this is that a lot of the history that I'm aware of, thanks to Nelson Dennis, but a lot of that history is being hidden in Puerto Rico. So a really good example is there was a prison, and it's right underneath the governor's mansion. And I'm not even kidding. Like, if you stand in the prison and you look up, there's his window. So it's very much in the center of San Juan, in the center of their capital. There was this prison where they tortured people that were not basically doing what the Americans wanted, the people that were pushing for independence. And so they had this prison that had just a horrible history. And when you go there now, it's the Department of Tourism. You walk in, and it's the most boring museum you've ever seen with nothing interesting in it. And it's no bigger than my office. But what I did is I walked into the back where there's a completely empty courtyard, and I walked to the side because I knew what I was looking for. And I went behind a wall where I'm not technically sure I was supposed to be back there, but I went behind this wall, and that's where I found three prison cells. There was no plaque. There was nothing explaining what was going on. It wasn't a museum, like a never forget type of thing. It was a, we're hiding this in plain sight type of thing. So they took this prison and they made it a part of tourism, but didn't give any indication whatsoever from a small plaque in the front that said this used to be a prison. Aside from that, you have no idea the nasty history that went on there. And if I don't know that history, how does someone my age in Puerto Rico know that history? Because it's not obvious from walking around.
Well, does anybody remember that Public Law 53 from 1947 that made it illegal to utter a word or sing a song or whistle a tune against the United States? I mean, really.
Yep. Or to have a Puerto Rican flag.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first time that I had heard that American citizens were denied that right.
Yeah, exactly. But for a lot of people in Puerto Rico, especially young ones, I'm not sure how much of that history that they know. Because that's just, I don't know, just I wasn't finding any of this obvious as I walked around, and it wasn't stuff that was discussed. People brought up the Jones Act. The Jones Act came up more than I would have thought that it was. I mean, people there are up on current legislation. They all knew about the Financial Control Board. They all knew about the Jones Act. That was the type of stuff, the more recent history, stuff that's affecting them now in law. But I'm not really sure that the old injustices are being taught. Because like you said, all the teachers there, they have to teach in English, which, you know, the island of Puerto Rico is initially a Spanish-speaking island.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an old unfair law that basically said you weren't allowed to speak Spanish in schools. I don't know who's writing their textbooks. But I just got this vibe of, yeah, Puerto Ricans are fine with what's happening. The recent injustices are bothering them. The old injustices, they're not obvious. Even the
and yet, as Faulkner said, I mean, you know, history is never the past. And in fact, it always continues to live. I mean, does anybody really talk about Albizu Campos or the nationalist movement? Because I know Nelson Dennis's book, and I know we're talking a lot about it, and we will add this to the composite of what we're offering today to America Trends podcast listeners. But, I mean, it was a big seller on the island.
Yeah, and so I'm not saying that they're, like, unaware of it, but it's not something that they have daily reminders of. Like, I had to go to Ponce to see my first statue of Albizu Campos, and I wanted to, he was a leader in the movement for independence, for those people that don't know.
Yes.
So he was definitely fighting the Americans. And then there was a massacre that happened in Ponce. There was a bunch of people just shot down in the street during a peaceful protest. It was horrible. And I wanted to go to that museum. That was the entire purpose of me driving across the island. Let's go to this museum, and I went at noon on a Saturday, and it was closed. And then I checked online, and it seems to be closed pretty much all the time. Now, I don't know if that's because of the government's funding situations, but when you look online, there's not a lot of people talking about being able to go in there. So it's like their history is there, but it's hidden in plain sight, and I feel like maybe that's on purpose. I mean, this is just me having been there once, but I was kind of surprised that there weren't museums that were talking about this and there weren't more celebrations of the independence. I mean, it really felt to me like I was living through what I was reading about from 100 years ago. It was like I was standing there and it was like, this isn't over. It's like people still are not allowed to vote. There's still United States citizens that are treated like second class. We are still doing stuff like the Financial Control Board and not allowing them to even allowing Puerto Ricans to have a seat on the board. I mean, this was history that was ongoing. And I think that was the part for me that really upset me and made me commit to paying attention to Puerto Rico. It's just that this isn't a problem that's been solved. This is just an injustice that has continued for over 100 years. And we're not really trying to make it right. And right now, there's a weather system that's only going to make it worse. So
let me ask you about the benefits that the Puerto Rican people get. Where do they stand as it relates to Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare?
So that's what's really – I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around it, to be completely honest with you. I know that they pay into those systems, but they don't get the same amount back. So – you know, they don't pay federal taxes the same way we do, but those are separately funded.
Right.
So that is one of the injustices that, you know, I got to talk, I did an episode, it was just a couple months, it was when I got back in March. I did an episode and I was able to talk to someone who used to work for the Secretary of State's office in Puerto Rico. And that was one of the injustices that he really focused on, was on the healthcare part in particular, because he felt that Puerto Ricans are paying into that system and they're not getting back a return on their investment. And that is a huge problem on the island. The healthcare issue is one of the main factors leading to the huge debt that they're in, because they're not able to provide healthcare for all the people that are low income on the island. There's a high percentage of people that are low income. So, you know, I wish I could give you more details on how that works, but I really don't understand it myself.
All right. Now, let me ask you, because you talk about, you know, coming back and being focused on this. Of course, you are the creator of congressionaldish.com. So when we think about the role that Congress is going to play in the future, we know about the Fiscal Control Board, but we've had these votes, these plebiscites, and they're non-binding as to whether they want to remain a commonwealth, become a state, become independent, and then Congress ultimately has to take some action. Do you see any movement? I think a lot of people know the politics that if you let Puerto Rico in, I mean, this would be decidedly Democratic. Republicans would want another, like Guam or someone in. So tell us what the politics are in Congress when it comes to Puerto Rico.
This is completely off their radar. There's no indication whatsoever that statehood is even on the table, even though Puerto Rico keeps voting over and over again saying they want to become a state. Congress is not acting on it. I mean, it's that simple. The only thing that I've seen today about Puerto Rico, considering there's a hurricane hitting it as we speak, is that in the Rules Committee, there was about a three-sentence discussion saying, yeah, we're going to have to give some money to the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico in addition to Houston and Florida. That's it. That's the only time that I've heard Puerto Rico brought up at all.
So we ignore their pleas to become a state?
Yes.
And why do we do that? Is it the politics in terms of how this would tip the balance, particularly in the U.S. Senate?
I think that's a big part of it right now, especially where the Republicans are controlling the House and the Senate. I do think that they're worried that if the people of Puerto Rico, who are low-income, Spanish-speaking, if they were able to be voters like the rest of us, they would probably vote Democratic, especially considering that this party now is so concerned with punishing Spanish-speaking people and trying to get them out of the country. So there's definitely reasons to believe that these would be Democratic voters. And so, yeah, I think that that's a factor. But it's also, right now, Puerto Rico is in debt, and so we would actually have to step in and do something about that, maybe shoulder some of that responsibility or fight the banks on behalf of Puerto Rico. It's definitely easier for Congress to be like, all right, we're going to set up this board. Let them deal with that on the island and go back to doing what we're going to do. It's just they're right now, these people in Congress are, there are so many problems that we have that they're not fixing, that Puerto Rico is just another one that they're not going to take on right now, especially where it's so much debt. It's like they're trying to make a budget work while slashing all these domestic policies and increasing funding for the military. So if you were to take on $70 billion of Puerto Rican debt at the same time, like, it's just, there's no incentive right now for the Republican Party to do that, and they have all the control.
Did you look at Puerto Rico in terms of its placement, where it is, and its importance from a military standpoint? I know that we had a lot of activity in a portion of Puerto Rico for many years. Is it Vallejos, or I'm forgetting the name of the area with the military operation?
Yeah, there's a little island off the north coast.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, I'm actually not sure what its current relevance is, but I do know that you're correct that there is a military presence there.
All right. Well, listen, we want to thank you. We've been waiting to get Jen Briney on with us on America Trends podcast, and she is a leader in this podcast world, and John and I learn a lot from her and are so grateful to her. But she's also so passionate in what it is that she does with her podcast, and she does it so well. So we want you to go visit Congressional Dish podcast and make certain that you let her know how much you're enjoying it, and she does take money from listeners, and we encourage you to support Jen in her efforts. And Jen, we will have you back on to talk about other things as we look at where Congress is going and where our politics are headed. And we thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun.
Well, we told you that Jen Briney would be a very interesting listen, and indeed she has been. And that is currently what's going on with Puerto Rico and the debt. And, of course, we recorded that just at the time that we were worried about the implications of Storm Irma. And, indeed, those implications proved out. And, John, we think now would be a good time, the way we've positioned all of this, to do the historical perspective on the issue of Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah, with Dennis, because this gives you really some background, and it really explains all the bad stuff that we've done and what's going on there with their government.
And particularly since Jen refers to Nelson Dennis, and I do in the context of that conversation. So let's hear from him directly. And this is another remarkable man. He's a playwright. He's been a politician, an author, just a wonderfully vibrant human being. And I said in one of the interviews that he should have been the mayor of New York City. Who knows? One day maybe he will be. But he's very busy making certain that people understand the history of Puerto Rico. So here he is, Nelson Dennis.
I can tell right now, 62 degrees. One of the most talented guys I think I have ever interviewed is the name Nelson Dennis. And I got to tell you, when I had him on about a month ago, I was so impressed by this gentleman. And I found out later he went to Taft, you know, right here in Watertown, then Harvard, Yale Law School, an attorney, an accomplished award-winning screenwriter, film director, and assemblyman who actually dealt with some of those, untoward individuals within the New York Assembly. I mean, my goodness, what you have done and the things in your career, and then to have written a book called War Against All Puerto Ricans, so you can take it from fiction to nonfiction. And I really wish, really, Nelson, we have a lot of Puerto Rican citizens here in the city of Waterbury, and I really wish that this was fictional, what you told us about the war against all Puerto Ricans and the things that we sent J. Edgar Hoover and others down to Puerto Rico to do over the years to silence people. I mean, it's unbelievable what goes on in our name, and yet you document it so well. And I'd love for you to revisit some of the issues that brought you to working so hard on this particular book. And then I want to talk about some of the contemporary issues related to Puerto Rico, okay?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it.
You're a remarkable human being. You really are. So, again, you were brought to this book because there was an independence movement going back to the early 50s in Puerto Rico. It led to an assassination attempt here on President Truman. I mean, it was a wild, wild scene. But what brought people to wanting independence from the United States? But yet we have such a tenuous relationship in any sense, being a commonwealth. But just, you know, revisit it for us if you could.
Well, the title is well chosen because it speaks to certain dramatic points in Puerto Rican history, but it also reflects just an ongoing tone in the relationship. War against all Puerto Ricans were words that were uttered by the police chief of Puerto Rico, a man named E. Francis Riggs, who was also a Yale graduate, very well-bred fellow, but he happened to be a military intelligence officer that was sent to Puerto Rico to militarize the entire police force in response to the fact that the Puerto Rican population had the temerity to organize itself into an agricultural strike in 1935 because they were starving. There was no minimum wage legislation allowed in Puerto Rico because even though in 1917 they were declared U.S. citizens, 1 month before the declaration of war was sent for to go into enter into World War One, in 1922 when they got back from the war, under the Supreme Court case of Balzac v. Puerto Rico discovered that the U.S. Constitution didn't apply to the island because they were considered an unincorporated territory, and therefore the privileges and immunities of the Constitution didn't apply. So no minimum wage legislation, no protection against the corporations that owned 80% of the acreage in Puerto Rico, which was several bank syndicates had essentially absconded with the land in Puerto Rico. So a man named Pedro Albizu Campos, very brilliant man, very committed to the cause of independence, led this island-wide agricultural strike that succeeded and ended up in doubling the wages from 75 cents to $1.50 per day for a 10-hour workday. That mere fact is what caused E. Francis Riggs to be recruited to go to become police chief of Puerto Rico. And by the way, his father was the president of the Riggs National Bank, the largest bank in Washington, D.C. He goes down.
Talk about Riggs.
Riggs. And they basically start chasing and shooting Puerto Ricans all over the island. Anything that had to do with the independence, anything that bespoke a sovereign state of mind was Riggs's target. After something known as the Rio Piedras Massacre, where four Puerto Ricans were killed in broad daylight in the town of Rio Piedras, he convened a press conference to say that if Albizu Campos, this other gentleman, and the nationalists continued to instigate the sugarcane workers and the university students, there would be war to the death against all Puerto Ricans. That's what he told the insular press. That's the word that he wanted to go out to the island. It's the equivalent of Bull Connor bringing out the dogs and the fire hoses, but except a little one step further. There was literally shooting people in broad daylight. And you could do this in Puerto Rico because if you hearken back to that era, Puerto Rico doesn't really register that palpably on people's minds because everybody has their own life. This United States is a seething, roiling republic with 340 million very impatient individuals who have all of whom have their own troubles. So Puerto Rico, well, you know, what's going on down there? And it's, you know, it's just more of an item of curiosity rather than engagement.
But when you think about this, I mean, the people today on the island, I mean, how much going back into the history books are they going to be pulling forward this tome, War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony? I mean, are they going to be reading this? Do they know this history? Does this, help us to understand some of the debates that are continuing to go on about the status of Puerto Rico?
Do you mean if the people in Puerto Rico know this history? They're aware of it. They know that there's been a very controversial and in many cases brutal engagement with the United States. But a lot of students don't, and so that's part of the gap. This is a book I wrote the book that I didn't see in the shelves. but let me just really quick about this. You see these dramatic high points, like Riggs shooting people in the Rio Piedras massacre. Then there was a Ponce massacre 2 years later, actually declared this war against all Puerto Ricans. They were really serious. They killed 17 unarmed men, women, and children in broad daylight in a Palm Sunday peaceful march, and it was known as a Ponce massacre. They enacted Public Law 53, which was known as the gag law, which made it illegal to say a word, sing a tune, whistle a tune, sing, own a Puerto Rican flag, any manifestation towards on behalf of independence or against the United States of America was declared a felony. It was essentially a thought crime was enough to land you in jail. And this was amazingly promulgated in precisely the year that George Orwell published 1984. Well, it was a bestseller. While the American public is reading 1984, George Orwell is alive and well on the island of Puerto Rico. You had 100,000 police, over 100,000 secret FBI files called carpetas opened on anyone, again, that had anything to do with independence or even spoke or was suspected of having any thoughts or associations with respect to independence. So this was the war against all Puerto Ricans, not just the drama, not just the fact that they bombed two towns in broad daylight, Jayuya and Utuado, in 1950, and arrested 3,000 Puerto Ricans in order to put down the revolution of October 1950. Those are the dramatic high points. But there's this ongoing tone of oppression and making sure that anyone that had a voice was a voice that would not be heard. And that has had an effect, I believe, on the Puerto Rican personality. It's made it. I was during my years in the Assembly and involved in Latino politics in New York. I noticed that very often when you have three Puerto Ricans, you have four opinions.
Wait a minute. I think that's a Jewish trait. But
that's right.
Yeah, you know that. But here's the question, though. I mean, the other day when I had you on, I said that you should be the mayor of New York. But now I'm changing my mind because I see where the head of the New York City Council is thinking of running for the governorship in Puerto Rico. Why aren't you going back down to Puerto Rico to run for office there to straighten out whether it should be the 51st state, whether it should remain a commonwealth or independent, what to deal with an economic crisis that is going on in Puerto Rico now, junk bond status? I mean, I want us to bring it all up to date. Where is Puerto Rico today, given this background and that many of us we knew nothing about in terms of the oppression that went on there and the attempts to quell free speech, independent thought? Where are we today?
Well, unfortunately, history is repeating itself because where it started, and to give you an immediate context, and you'll see it as a mirror image of what's unfolding to right now. When the United States occupied in 1898, the next year there was a hurricane, one of the worst in the century, Huracán San Ciriaco. The United States sent no relief. Instead, the following year, 1900, they devalued the Puerto Rican currency by 40%. They forced them to have a currency exchange with the American dollar, and they failed to acknowledge the buying power of the Puerto Rican peso. So overnight, everyone's wealth, the economy was drained of 40% of its value that year. The year after that, they instituted something called the Hollander Act, which is a steeply graduated set of property taxes against every farmer in Puerto Rico. Obviously, with these economic hits, they would all have to go looking for loans. Well, the largest bank, the only one lending,
the
was
Riggs.
Called the American Colonial, well, not Riggs, but of that ilk. It was called the American Colonial Bank. Mm. And there was no usury law restriction. So it was a given that within a few short years, Puerto Rican farmers would be defaulting right and left. It magnified the 2007 mortgage crisis tenfold. And you'll have an idea. Well, within 30 years, the net result was this radical divestiture of land all over the island, whereby the United States owned 80% of the most arable land. Now, pitch forward to today. We have a downward spiraling economic crisis of public debt and unemployment in Puerto Rico, $73 billion in public debt. The way we got there is the key. There is no inherent economic infrastructure in Puerto Rico. There's something known as the cabotage law. It's Section 27 of the 1920 Merchant Marine Act, under which Puerto Rico is specifically prohibited from developing its own shipping industry. Puerto Rico is an island. It has to import, by definition. Everything has to come from
You know, this
from
sounds
outside.
Like fiction that you would have written, Nelson. I mean, this is unbelievable. By the way, the $73 billion does not even account what I'm reading, the defunded, underfunded pensions and healthcare liabilities. So you've got even more on top of this, right?
Well, and but that factors in because Wall Street, the rating services, Moody's, Fitch, Dun & Bradstreet, they all communicated a scenario to two successive administrations in Puerto Rico, and it was done in utter bad faith. They said that if you, to the government, inflict a series of fiscal austerities under the rubric of good government and balanced budgeting, we will not downgrade your status, your public debt to junk bond status. So the governments dutifully laid off 23,000 workers, eliminated health benefits for pensioned teachers, rolled back pensions across the board to all public workers on the island, increased property taxes and small business taxes, raised gasoline taxes twice in the past year, accelerated water and electricity tax hikes, so that right last night I was on Al Jazeera television, and they with the resident commissioner Pierluisi and a former governor named Aníbal Sila.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the package of the info package they put out, they had a fellow interviewed who was paying in the area of $1,000 a month in electricity costs for his home. So this is what was done in the name of good government and balanced budgeting. They did that, and Wall Street had said, if you do that, we won't downgrade your debt. Well, guess what? They did precisely what they said they wouldn't do. Mm. Having inflicted all these austerities, all three rating services in turn declared Puerto Rico's debt to be junk bond status, thereby precipitating an entirely new set of taxes. Just two weeks ago, the governor of Puerto Rico announced an 11.5% sales tax.
On top of everything else that's been imposed, I mean, this sounds totally outrageous. I mean, I don't even know. How does anybody live on the island? I mean, how does anybody afford what it is that is costing them on the island, and then with all the strictures that are placed on their economy and their uncertain status going forward? I mean, what rights they have, do not have, or just the right to be bilked? I mean, what is going on here, honestly?
You're asking the perfect question, because they don't. They don't live on the island. People are leaving in record numbers. We've had a mass out-migration of around 150,000 people in the last 2 years. There's been a migration now that rivals the mass migration that occurred right after World War II. This is now known as the second diaspora of the Puerto Rican population. At the same time that all these hits are being thrown on the heads of middle class and working class Puerto Ricans, there's something known as Act 22, which provides a 20-year complete tax abatement to interest, dividend, and capital gains income to any high net worth investors that go to Puerto Rico and buy a property. Leading that charge now is a fellow named John Paulson, mm-hmm. who was a extremely successful predatory lender during the 2007 mortgage crisis. His hedge fund made $15 billion in profits betting against the American economy, betting against homeowners that were losing their homes. He profited because he bought up these distressed properties, these known as homes, for pennies on the dollar. Well, he's under the aegis of this 20-year tax abatement deal. He's now building a $500 million resort and luxury condominium complex in Dorado Beach. And the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Bloomberg News, and New Yorker magazine are the carnival barkers for this freak show that is becoming the Puerto Rican economy. They are inspiring people. They're exhorting these high net worth individuals, telling them, go on down. The water's fine. There's a 20-year tax haven, and it's working. So what we're getting, the net result, forget Brooklyn. We're seeing the gentrification of an entire island. That's a sad thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, how many Puerto Ricans, you say 150,000 have left in this latest diaspora. I mean, how many, you know, people live on the island?
now there's been a sea change in the population. Over the last 5 years is the first time that the Puerto Rican population in the mainland radically exceeds that on the island. The island population now is around 3.6 million. The mainland population of Puerto Ricans is 4.5 million. A huge number have actually, and this has sort of almost sprung up. A lot of people aren't aware that there's close to 700,000 Puerto Ricans living in Orlando and almost a million Puerto Ricans living in the state overall in Florida.
Mm.
They're actually going to, yeah, they're going to be actually a big political factor in
even more so than Cubans, or what's the relative balance going to be in Florida as you see it?
That's going to be, I think it's now coming pretty close. I think there's just a, I can't give, it's a
no,
simple fact, you can Google it. I think the, Cubans is a little over a million, and I think Puerto Ricans are a little under. So it's almost reaching parity. One thing is that Puerto Ricans are born as U.S. citizens.
Right.
So they immediately have the vote. Most Puerto Rican, Cubans are second and third generation, and so they're also citizens, but not all. So I would say that on a de facto basis, the political clout of Puerto Ricans is now second to none as far as Latino groups in Florida.
Yeah,
so
that's important on the presidential side. Now, Nelson, where are we as it relates to, I mean, having talked about all the economics and the taxes and everything else, I mean, it's somewhat head spinning and, you know, some of the debt obligations and how you ever get out from under this. So how does that play in the short time we have left to the political consideration of independence, Commonwealth maintenance, or actually 51st state? I mean, how does this all fit together, if it does?
Well, wherever it ends up, there has to be a paradigm shift, because the relationship now is clearly dysfunctional. It's not working for any of the parties involved. The United States doesn't want to get saddled with a $73 billion debt, and they realize that things, that the current status of Commonwealth is not working on political, economic, spiritual, on all sorts of levels. It's no longer a working model.
Mm.
So now the question becomes, okay, so which direction? Well, the statehood route, it has some specific and concentrated knots of resistance. The cabotage law that I was referring to, whereby the products that come into Puerto Rico have to be offloaded from any foreign registry boats and then reloaded onto American-owned vessels. It's like the equivalent of digging a ditch and filling it up again. There's some exceptions, highly regulated, tariffed, and quoted foreign registry vehicles, which then pass all those costs on to the Puerto Rican consumer. Under some exceptions, can bring in, bring products into Puerto Rico, but the bulk, the law applies to the bulk of the shipping that comes in, into Puerto Rico. Well, that has to be, that would be one major portion of the paradigm shift. If you look at Puerto Rico as an island, one of the basic building blocks of its own economic self-sustenance, so that you don't have to just keep pumping food stamps and federal transfer dollars in there, would be its own shipping and maritime industry. That's a no-brainer. The problem is the opposition. There's unions in Jacksonville, Florida, because it yields about 50,000 jobs right off the top. You get great employment. But Jacksonville doesn't want to lose those jobs. And then you have management, the four Jones Act carrier companies, they're going to lobby. So the management, the companies are going to lobby the Republican Party. The unions are going to lobby the Democratic Party. And the local political officials in Jacksonville, Florida, are going to do everything that they can to keep that status quo of the Jones Act. So that's an example of resistance, but that's also an example of resistance to statehood. The Republican Party is not too keen on having two more senators and five more congressmen that are going to come in all speaking Spanish. That's one level of resistance. And the other is voting Democrat. Republicans are, you know, that's going to be not seismic, but extremely instrumental power shift.
Well, who decides if the status as a Commonwealth changes, as opposed
Congress.
To have Congress does.
Congress.
Okay, so
that's like asking the fox to patrol the hen house.
Yeah. Well, what do the folks in Puerto Rico, I mean, they've had plebiscites on this before. I mean, you know, what power does that hold, or what influence does that hold, whatever their vote is?
Unfortunately, because since the U.S. Congress has plenary jurisdiction over anything that emanates from the Puerto Rican government or the Puerto Rican people, there's no binding aspect to anything that Puerto Rico does, because it is still essentially a colony. I mean, it's.
I understand. Well, listen.
We call it a commonwealth. So the problem will become is that I don't think the solution will be narrowly defined a political solution. It's going to have to be a holistic one, meaning that Puerto Rico, unfortunately, is going to have to become such a problem, such a crisis, something along the order of Greece, that then the United States can't ignore it merely out of its own self-interest. And so, therefore, unfortunately, I think this crisis is going to have to deepen, and then it's going to be resolved on economic terms.
Well, what about the fact that Puerto Rico enacted that law to allow the government corporations to declare bankruptcy, and that was overturned by a U.S. federal judge in San Juan? Could that be a tipping point or no?
Well, that's part of the short-term scenario, but what's happened is that 117 years ago, the United States took away Puerto Rico's legs and replaced it with a series of crutches, short-term expedients, tax abatement deals for foreign corporations and investors who then, after they avail themselves of those advantages, they repatriate the profits back to the United States, and they eventually leave.
Okay, hey, listen, Nelson, you are just too interesting. I'm caught up in this, but I have got to get to the news. I'm going to have you back, I promise.
Okay.
Thank you, and we'll follow what's going on in the news and have him back. WHER.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Nobody's asked us.
But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, @TrendsPodcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that, too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us @TrendsPodcast or using the #TrendsPodcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste and you get more programming like this and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. And let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.